Thank you for inviting me to this very interesting conference. My background is particle physics, but in recent years, I've been working on field theory for quantum Hall effect. I did this work with a student, Hui Zhai, in Tsinghua University about 1 year ago when I was on sabbatical to the Institute for the Center for Advanced Study at Tsinghua University. At that time, Jai Hui was a student. Now, Dr. Jai is a postdoc of Jason Ho. Yeah, now he's in the U.S. So at that time, yeah, we were just curious about Moses Chen's experiment. We were trying to understand, what is super solid. And our approach is to start from a many-body wave function to see whether we can construct a many-body wave function that allows both condensation in a perfect crystal. So our motivation is to address the problem of both condensation in a perfect crystal. So historically, we know that in 1962, in a similar paper by Xin Yang for the off-diagonal long-range order in condensed matter physics, there is a remark almost by the end of this paper. It was mentioned that it was evident from these examples that OD of diagonal Lagrange order may occur in liquid, and it may also occur in a solid. But in a solid, the basic group cannot contain particles that are localized, such as nuclei. So on one hand, the possibility was mentioned that the off-diagonal Lagrange order may occur in a solid. But on the other hand, it states that the so-called basic group, that's the name for example, Cooper pairs in superconductivity, cannot contain particles that are localized, such as nuclei. We know that, for the solid helium, the constituent particles are just nuclei. And in a solid, we thought that, they should be localized. So the question still remains whether off-diagonal Lagrange order can occur in a solid with a basic group containing the nuclei. Then in 1969.
We've already heard this many times, so.
Right, yeah. Yes, okay. I will go fast. Okay. Yeah, to motivate. This is the well-known paper of Andrea and Lipschitz in 69, in which it suggests that the defects, impurities, or vacancies may become condensed and move freely through the crystal. So at a very low temperature, we may have superfluid with defects or impurities or vacancies, condensation. Then the in 70s, Chester suggests that there are model states which can simultaneously exhibit both Einstein condensation and the crystal ordering. However, he also mentioned or added one final speculation, namely that a quantum crystal can only have a Bose-Einstein condensation if it has a finite fraction of vacancy. We would expect that when we have both Bose-Einstein condensation and crystalline ordering, the system may not share many properties that the normal superfluid has. However, Luggett, Tony Luggett, pointed out also in 97 that, however, one important property of superfluid, that's the so-called non-classical rotational inertia, may be shared by solid. However, he used the exchange effects in Helium 3 solid. He estimated the superfluid fraction is very small, probably less than 1 of 10,000 at T equal to zero. Recently, Phil Anderson, in a paper, pointed out that this may be underestimate the superfluid fraction, because the statistic in the helium 4 is bosonic, very different from the Fermi statistics in helium 3. There is an important sign difference in the exchange energy, so that for the super solid helium 4, the superfluid fraction may not be as small as this. It's well known that the non-classical rotational initial consider the following situation. We have helium atoms confined in annular geometry, and we rotate the whole system. If the free energy of the system as the function of the angular frequency, if there's an extra contribution due to the rotation, which does not exist in the classic case, then we may define a superfluid fraction from this extra term in this well-known manner. So the key point here is that the free energy or the energy of the many-body state is sensitive to the twisted phase boundary conditions, because the rotation will introduce a twist phase boundary condition to the system. For solid helium, it's well known that we have a large lattice zero-point motion. In the usual solid, the total interatomic potential acting on one atom is basically quadratic. However, in the solid helium, if the interatomic pair potential is Lennard Jones, then the total potential looks like this, with very shallow valley near the hard core boundary. And the Lindemann ratio is quite big. For the usual solid with such big Lindemann ratio, we would think that the lattice have melted already. So of course, these are well-known facts, because the helium atom mass is light, and helium atoms has the so-called weak interactions. Right.
Let's sort the helium. That's two deeps. A1, A2, A3 are lattice size.
Yeah. Here are the other atoms.
So that's right. Two deeps are not halfway between A1 and A2?
No, yeah. Because this one is in the potential of this and this. The atom 2, right?
A2 is a maxima.
Right,
that's not
here.
Realistic, I suppose.
Yeah, this is, we only consider the linear case, but in the three-dimensional case, yeah. We have the three-dimensional potential structure. Yes. Yeah. Right. That's true. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Is halfway between A1 and A2 in state of
wave. Oh. Okay. You are right. This is only symbolic. Okay. Yeah. Actually, the hardcore size is quite big. Right. Right, yeah.
Focus on the potential is not important. I mean, the kinetic energy is so high that the details of the potential.
Right, yeah, so we have a large lattice zero-point motion, and the solid is very compressible, and has low density, and the vacancy is easily created and can be very mobile. This is phase diagram suggested by Moses Chang and the collaborators' experiment. So this is pressure axis, this is the temperature axis. We have normal solid here, and the experiment is done basically in this way. We have a constant pressure on the sample, and the temperature becomes decreasing. So these are the experimental points in the experiments for the so-called the normal solid and the super solid phase transition. Of course, we still need to have more experiments to verify this experimental data, this phase diagram. In our approach, we try to look at the problem whether we can have a many-body wave function that allows both the Einstein condensation for a perfect crystal. So here, the term perfect crystal perhaps have been better replaced by the conventional rate solid. Namely, we assume that the number of atoms equals exactly that of size. So to motivate our many-body wave function, let us first consider the two-particle case. Suppose we have two particles, x1, x2, in the equilibrium, around the equilibrium position, A1 and A2. So the usual wave function for the indistinguishable particle case, we have a product. If the particles are bosons, the wave function should be symmetric, so we get a sum of product. Actually, we know that in theory, phonon theory for ordinary or normal solid helium, this kind of wave function is used. It's called the Nazanov wave function. So, however, has not incorporate the two-particle short-range correlation due to short-range repercussion. So the usual way is to incorporate the short-range two-particle correlation due to atomic pair repercussion is to add a Jastrow factor into the wave function. And the Jastrow wave factor is 1 at large distance and is 0 at the short distance or in the hard core. So, yeah. And J becomes 0 when the distance between the two atoms becomes very small. So we note that, because of the existence of the Jastrow wave function, we can add two more terms. These are the previous symmetrized terms. However, if we add these two terms, then the terms in the bracket, square bracket, actually can be written as a product form. Yes?
You say formally add these two terms, but you're actually completely changing the character of the wave function because
that's right.
In the first case you have single occupation sites and then
that's
you
right.
add those two terms, you're adding double occupation and vacancies at the same time, right?
That's right. Yeah.
However, this is precisely the point where you go from like an insulator to a metal.
That's right. That's right. However, the point here is that you can see that when we add these two terms, it multiplied by Jastrow wave function because X1 and X2 can be both near one side. So with Jastrow function here, actually the added terms can be very, very small. This is a way,
factor on zero means qualitatively changing.
Right. Yeah. So
it's not very, very. It might be small.
Right.
But, yeah.
Okay. So
you can change the Jastrow wave function to make it small if you want, of course.
Yeah.
You
so
can replace the Jastrow wave function with something else.
Right. Yeah. So however, the point here is that these new terms may not contribute to or change the energy significantly. Of course, it changes.
That's
a quantitative issue. I agree. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, however, theoretically, when the terms here becomes a product, and it also has the up. It's periodic. Each factor here is periodic on the lattice. Actually, that simplifies greatly the mathematic treatment of the many-body wave function. Certainly, this way of doing things can be generalized to a many-body wave function for a commensurable quantum solid, where the number of atoms precisely equal to that of size. So, qualitatively, what we try to argue here is that, such changes, the characters of the wave function change significantly, but the energy changes little. However, later I will address the problem of the energetics. So the many-body wave function suggests at that time is we have the usual gestural wave function, and we have another factor, which is a product of single particle wave functions, and this single particle wave function is periodic with a crystal symmetry, and the gestural factor takes care of the short range correlation.
So is this a 1D problem?
Pardon?
Is this a
one-dimensional
problem?
No. So we can...
I wonder what product of the chain of now means. Oh, I see. You just mean you have
no. Oh, yeah. We just label the size with a single. If you like, you can label it a set of integers. Okay, yeah.
The product.
Right, yes, yeah. So then the idea is that, if the in superfluid, we know that the gestural factor can have a Bose-Einstein condensation in the zero momentum state. If so, formally, if we think that we can expand this factor in terms of the Fourier series for these coordinates, there should be an kick to zero term there, represents the microscopic occupation of the zero momentum states. Then the psi wave function will approximately of this form. So it has both diagonal long range order represented by the this periodic product of periodic functions, and we may also have a Bose condensation. Of course, this is only a basic idea. We need to go through some mathematical manipulation to see whether this is really true or not.
Before you were kind of expanding to double occupancy because the gestural function was protecting you of this double occupancy.
Right.
Now when you do this condensation there, you lost that projector out, right? How that can be, I'm confused.
Here, this is not an exact mathematic statement, just about the rough idea, how can we have both of them?
The protection is all in the dot, dot, dot.
Right, right, yeah. So one example is that the f of s single particle wave function is sum of Gaussian-like wave packet. Each wave packet represents the zero point motion of the helium atom around its equilibrium or lattice position. However, I emphasize that f of x may have some other form. So we are going to discuss it later. So the proof of the boson condensation is a Pauling. The more rigorous statement is the Pauling. For a many-body wave function of this form, here we have taken the Jastrow functions to be exponential minus of a pair potential. So actually, the statement of the theorem follows a similar theorem due to Riato in 70s. Okay, so he actually used the this condition for the pair potential. Here we fix S and we sum over I from 1 to T. So the point here is that this is always greater than or equal to a minus phi. Phi is a positive constant. Satisfying that the URJ, yeah, this thing is less than infinity. Then the statement is that
would I be pushing this too much to just say you assume the potential is bounded from below?
Yes, yeah, but however, this also I think imposes some condition, right?
No matter how big T is,
right, and so on. Okay. Right, right, yeah.
There so could be other conditions. Not that it's relevant, but if U was like a hard sphere potential, then it might. It would,
well, that's the less than infinity.
Oh, okay.
That's
yes.
Nice.
Right, yeah, it's here. So then the one particle density matrix has a non-vanishing limit when the R and the R prime, the distance between them tends to infinity, is n sub zero times f star and f r prime. For the usual superfluid case, if we take f to be 1, of course, we don't have these two factors. And the definition of the one particle density matrix is as usual. We have this product of psi and psi bar, and we integrate over all except one particle. And the Q is the normalization constant.
So yes? If I take that potential as Leonard Jones potential.
Yeah, it's satisfied.
Satisfied.
Right, yes. Yeah.
So any conventional potential will satisfy that.
I say many, any. No. I should not say any.
That's actually the wave function. This is all about the wave function. Nothing about the potential has come in.
Yeah,
that's
right. No. Right, yeah, because I have taken, yeah. Of course, here, yeah. Right, yeah. This U, of course, you may view it as a variational parameters, right? Or we may identify it in certain sense as the pair potential between the real particles. Yeah.
So I don't make that. What you're proving here is that if the wave function has this form,
right,
then you have a supersolid.
That's right.
But the question that Gab was getting at the beginning was whether this is a good approximation to the ground state wave function. And
right.
You have this heuristic argument for it if you don't have proof.
Right.
Let me remind you what I was telling you yesterday. This is a supersolid, but the next step will be that I can improve this function by making it incommensurate. Because n continuous variation.
Later.
The next step will be mine.
Right.
I will show you that actually it's not consistent idea to have everything commensurate. You start with commensurate, you demonstrate it, it's super good. And then I say you have a number and not. Just adjust it to minimize the energy. Because now it's a continuous parameter. And condensate is a structureless classical field. Just optimize the number and not to minimize the energy.
You can prove that you can always lower the energy by putting
in. Yesterday I was just demonstrating using different language that there is no constraint.
Yeah, numerically.
From that language into the language of this wave function, and just think, okay, you can and not. It's a variational parameter. Go ahead, adjust it to minimize the energy.
Okay, so.
Commit some building.
No, no, no. The point here is that.
You assume commensurability, right?
Yeah, we assume commensurability. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
We assume, right. Yeah.
You get some wave function with and not, with condensate. And then I'm
saying it's not. But the condensate in our theorem is not a variational principle, okay? Variational parameter, because mathematically we need to actually study this limit. So the point here is whether we can set a lower bound about n sub zero. Okay, yeah. So, as usual, we define n sub zero in this form. Actually, this is the usual expression for n sub zero, even when the f of r is equal to unity. So the zeta n n plus 1 is given by this. The point here is that we can prove a lower bound about this zeta q plus 1. So we have phi, which appears in our conditions for the Jastrow wave function of the pair atomic pair potential. Delta is the minimum of the U. So except the factor kappa, which is maximum of the single particle wave function, absolute value to Q, this is the same as the lower bound given by Reato. So therefore, we can derive this lower bound for n sub zero with z is the so-called the in this way, which can be interpreted as the fugacity of an equivalent classical statistical mechanical model. So the point here is really whether the z is finite or not. If z becomes infinity, then your question, your suspicion will be correct.
I'm not equal to zero.
Right.
I'm about 5 minutes.
All right. So, yeah, to show or to argue that the fugacity is finite, we just follow the usual strategy to interpret the normalization constant of the wave function as a partition function. So here we have the Boltzmann factor for the usual Jastrow function, which is a pair potential. However, we have some the extra periodic factor give us a periodic external potential. So the point here is that, yeah, if the total particle density is less than or equal to the close-packed density, then the thermodynamic limit of the system exists with a finite fugacity, then we get a lower bound for the n sub zero. So the point here is that we claim that the lower bound of n sub zero does not vanish. So we have a finite, though maybe small or maybe big, superfluid not fluid, condensation fraction. As I have mentioned that the in our answers for the many body wave function, the periodic part actually can be arbitrary, satisfying certain non-singular conditions, namely the maximum should not go to infinity. We may take the periodic part as a sum of Gaussian-like wave packets, and each wave packet represents the zero-point fluctuation around each side in normal solid. Then, in this case, we may say that the physical meaning of the many-body wave function is that we have a coherent zero-point motion, or we have condensation of zero-point motions. However, as later David told us that, unfortunately, this wave function is energetically a little bit higher than the normal solid. And last week you mentioned that the energy difference is about a milli Kelvin to micro Kelvin.
Actually, maybe I misspoke. Putting the exchange in is less than a milli Kelvin. That is that first step where you symmetrize.
Mm-hmm.
Putting the changing from the localized form to the sort of band form for the wave function. I'm not sure how much higher that would be, but it would be bigger than.
It would be bigger.
I think. Okay. This is a long time. I don't remember the precise numbers.
Yeah. So. Of course,
the whole problem with the variational method is that you have to do two variational calculations, and then you always say, well, have you optimized this one as much as this one?
Mm-hmm.
It's a kind of an undefined procedure.
You're comparing variational function for an insulating state and the variational function for that, because it's not a fair comparison.
It's a kind of undefined game.
I think you were comparing your Monte Carlo with this guy.
Right.
And if you compare just one bed function with another bed function, you know.
the insulating function is pretty good, so right.
But why don't you compare your exact solution with this variational one?
Okay.
Well, so then you get about a half a Kelvin per atom difference,
which is not.
I mean, it can be
small,
especially with TC is 0.2 Kelvin.
Yeah, so of course I would like to raise the issue that whether some unknown mechanism here could help to lower the energy. Of course, from the numerical results right now, it seems likely. So then the question is whether in the future some other material or artificial material may realize something like this. I don't know.
Chester already answered that question. You take the classical bare potential that makes a crystal, you ask what Hamiltonian is that the solution of, and that will give you a super solid.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, the three-body potential is much stronger than the two-body potential. So how you would ever make this, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or another possibility is
whether,
for example, in the interior of the neutron star, where the density is really high, and so there is fermions, but still, there may be some pi condensation, so we don't know, okay? Fancy words.
Three-body potential, even in helium-4, is stronger than two-body potential.
No, not at helium.
You're saying if you do that process of finding quantum Hamiltonian,
it has nothing to do with helium anymore.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Another possibility which I learned actually at this mini workshop is the talk by Mike Ma last week, namely what they have actually is so-called exciton condensation, in which actually the one particle, single particle wave function along the diagonal may have this two-peak form with the minimum local minimum in the middle and the local maximum away from the center. Yeah. They called this configuration as an exciton, namely the because the particle mostly is not at the center, so it's viewed as a vacancy, and the probability of the particle at some other positions is viewed as interstitial. So they call this as a bound state of vacancy and institution interstitial. So it's called the exciton condensation. If in there wave function, we consider their wave function for a commensurable crystal, actually the wave function should be of the same form as ours with the periodic function given by the periodic repetition of such wave function. So I would like to call this as a deformed zero-point motion. Namely, in the normal solid, we have a one-peak Gaussian-like wave function, and in the supersolid, we have this deformed wave function. If this can happen, then we have actually a sort, I think we may call it as quantum structural phase transition, namely the single particle wave function in a unit cell somehow change from the usual zero-point motion to this strange form. Of course, energetically, this seems even more disfavorable than this case. As has mentioned, if we add vacancies, we by considering the incommensurable solid, of course, we expect that the condensation may become bigger. But of course, the problem with the energetics there also might be improved. So I just come to the conclusion. For hardcore bosons with short-range repercussion, if zero-point fluctuation at a different size become coherent and get condensed, the quantum boson system at absolute zero can be can have microscopic occupation in periodic single-particle states. And thus, both diagonal long-range order and off-diagonal long-range order simultaneous. Then the proposed class of the many-body wave functions provides a possible mechanism leads to the supersolid through condensation of the usual or deformed zero-point motions in a commensurable solid. So, however, yeah, we know that's the big problem to relate to reality is the energetics. So could there be some unknown mechanism to rescue for the solid hidden case or in some extreme conditions? This may be realized. Okay, thank you for your attention.
Any further questions?
It seems to me that this is the second talk we've had in 2 days in which the theorem was proved. And Boris's theorem seems to contradict yours.
No, the rational wave function. I'm just saying that
the ground state is incommensurate, which means that it doesn't mean that you cannot propose a wave function which is commensurate and features condensate. My point is simple. You give me the function, I do a better job.
He can always, going outside the commensurability condition, he
it's
can always lower the energy.
It's a objection which I hear from the people. I can easily get an email. You guys, I didn't read your paper, but you guys are not right. Because I can easily propose a wave function like that. And they propose, for example, take optical lattice, filling factor 1, remove optical lattice, here is your wave function. It's easy to propose a wave function which is condensate and which is commensurate. Mm-hmm. Our point is that this
wave function
is not the ground state.
You're saying it can never be the ground state.
It can be a ground state with probability zero.
That's
true.
Enough
for most of us.
He has a condition about the vacancy interstitial being different, right? If there was some sort of supersymmetry
once you have asymmetry between vacancies and interstitial at the microscopic level, of course, then it's fine too.
So in other words, as long as zero is a generic point,
that's why you can do the word generic, unless you have some fine tuning.
So the ground state or not?
So I'm going to try to keep you.
Okay. If I have equal number of particle equal to number of sides, constraint on this huge constraint, not the ground state.
On the lattice. But it's a typical fine tuning. When you take a lattice, put by hand.
Then you change the Hilbert space. Then you go to another Hamiltonian, you change the Hilbert space, you find a new ground state. But you are comparing with.
I'm discussing just continuous space when there is no predetermined periodic structure, just particle.